Coming up on episode number 326, it's a cover-to-cover interview, this time with Concrete Blonde lead singer Johnette Napolitano. She's got a brand new album coming out, a solo album called Scarred. Let's hear about it and about some of her covers coming up right now on Coverville.
Just getting rougher, cover me. Come on, baby, cover me. Well, I'm looking for a lover who would come on in and cover me.
And though I used to wonder why, I used to cry till I was dry.
My guest tonight was lead singer, songwriter, and bassist for the band Concrete Blonde, who had a number one single on the modern rock charts with Joey. Since then, she's been composing music for film scores such as Wicker Park and Underworld and the new film Dead Silence, as well as a gallery artist in her home of Joshua Tree, California. Her new solo album, Scarred, comes out May 28th on Hybrid Records. Johnette Napolitano, welcome to Coverville.
Thank you so much. It makes it sound like I've actually done something.
Well, you have.
Well, okay. That's great. Thank you.
Did I get all that stuff right? I mean, you've been...
Yeah, you did. Absolutely.
And...
Sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been listening to the new album, which I think is great. It's darker. It seems to me to be a little bit darker than some of the Concrete Blonde stuff and the Pretty and Twisted and Vowel Movement. But it also seems a little bit more personal and poetic. Is there a lot of you in this album? Is it?
Yeah, it was one thing I think you have to be to be a writer is have courage. And I never really felt like I had much. You really have to lay things on the line, especially with this one. It's my first official solo record, and what would make this different than a Concrete Blonde record? There's quite a few things, but mainly it's been my experience in the last couple of years. A lot's gone down. You know, life is what it is. I lost my little brother, which was very devastating to me, and was diagnosed with a weird little heart thing, which just really kicked my ass. And it'll make you sit and think and go, you know, well, you know, what if today was your last day? What if this was the last record I ever made? And I really wanted to lay some stuff out. But it's not necessarily all about me. I've had some great experiences as well. Meeting John Trudell was a huge thing for me because I really admire John, and I'm working on his record. I've put some vocals on his record that will be coming out. And John Trudell is a legendary activist, Native American activist, for those who don't know, and also a poet, a brilliant poet and a brilliant writer. And he's tremendously inspiring and came out to the cabin and did some things. So poem for the Native was dedicated to him, and I'd actually written that some years ago, but it never fit in Concrete Blonde. There are a lot of things that just don't fit. You know, when you're in a band, you are a collective, and in spite of the fact that I may have written a lot of that stuff myself, it was written for the band. You know, it's like, well, okay, if it's like, you know, you're going to go somewhere, you dress for the occasion. And everything that was written for Concrete Blonde, I very much had the band members in mind and the style in mind and who we were as a group. With this record, a lot of the tracks were written by a guy named Will Crudson and Sultan Ahmed, two Englishmen. Will, I had met in a record store, God, maybe 15, maybe even 20 years ago England, and he recognized me in the record store, which at the time was ridiculous because it wasn't even in central London. It was on the outskirts of London, and I was with Chris Tangerides, who produced Bloodletting. I was visiting him, and I thought Chris had put him up to it. Will came up to me and said, "Are you joining up from Concrete Blonde?" And I looked at Chris. I said, "Okay, this is very funny." And and Will and I have stayed friends ever since. He was in a band called Rachel Stamp that were very popular in the UK. And he just, over Hurricane Katrina, I think it was, I was out at the cabin and not in a good state of mind. And my state of mind has been very wobbly and weird in the last few years. And it's one of the reasons that I did leave the city and move out to Josh, which has been a very healing place for me, and it is for a lot of people. And Will was sending me these tracks, and because we live in the times that we do, I'm able to work over transatlantically, electronically, so we can send tracks back and forth, and I've got my Pro Tools rig out at my cabin. And so I started working on it, and the music was so rich that I found myself going places lyrically and going places vocally that I had never really gone before. And just the colors and the palette that he works with texturally and sonically, I was able to, it really inspired me and pushed me to do some different things. The lyrics were fast and furious, manic actually, and that's the way I like to work. It's difficult because it's not a good state to be in for real life and for interaction with other people. But as far as pulling art out of the air and channeling things through your, you know, just, it was just insane. I went over to London a couple of times, and I think one of those sessions, I was staying in a room in the studio and just up all night. I think I banged out like four lyrics and sang four tracks in 2 days. And it was really, really very intense, you know. So I went over there twice last year. Will came over once, and we started forming these songs. And the Wicker Park song, the Coldplay cover, is a beautiful song, and that came from Danny Lohner and I had worked on the Underworld soundtrack, and somebody called him to request that we cover that song. And Danny and I weren't really that enthusiastic about doing it, but because we'd rather write something, you know. Danny was in Nine Inch Nails, obviously, for 10 years or so, and Perfect Circle, and does a lot of amazing stuff, and worked on a lot of movies, did the Constantine soundtrack, and just a lot of stuff. And so we did the song, and it turned out to be a gorgeous song. It's really a beautiful song. I had no idea that Coldplay were that good.
Numbers and figures, pulling your part.
I immersed myself so deeply in each song for its own sake that I didn't think about. And by the way, these days you don't have to, because there's individual downloads and individual tracks, and it's almost back to a time of singles when you used to buy a 45, you know?
Right.
It's kind of that way now, where you can download one song. So I really put everything into each song, thinking, you know, this is the only song, and then pretty soon there was enough of them for an album, and that's the way it kind of all rolled together, you know?
Well, it's an interesting perspective to look at it with the fact that we do have individual song downloads.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So yes, that does, and it sounds like it did kind of affect the way you'd put an album together now versus 10 years ago.
Sure.
Wow, very interesting. And it also sounds like it was a bit of therapy for you.
Yeah, well, music has always been that for me, ever mm-hmm. since I was a little kid. I wrote my first song when I was 12 years old. I had a very intense, violent, unstable home life. And music was the place to go, you know. There was always something going on, and always, you know, I'd be scared to go home from school because I wouldn't know what I was coming home to.
Oh, geez.
And I'm scared to have people over because I never knew when my parents were going to get into it and start throwing things at each other, or guns would come out, or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really very difficult. And with a guitar, you know, I am very grateful to my parents for the short time that they did get along. You know, I think I was 9 years old when they, you know, they realized I had a musical aptitude, and it was very strange to them. I was the first kid, so I think it was all very strange to them and new to them. And they bought me a guitar, and it was the greatest thing anyone's done for me in my life. So I love him for it. But that was the only place I had to go, was, you know, my little drawing and my little guitar. And I wrote a song when I was 12 years old, and that was it. I could just go. The only place I had to go was in my head. And I have to learn, it's very difficult to get out of that when you've done it all your life, because it makes it, you know, at this point in my life, it is valuable for me to have relationships with people, and I'm not very good at it. And I really got to sometimes get out of my head. I like being there, but then, you know, dark things can happen, and you gotta learn to live outside it too. But then again, I come out and there's dark things out here too, so bye, go back in there.
it sounds like in some cases it's easier to be a solo artist for you than to be part of a group, or maybe I guess it's more comfortable, or...
Well, right now it is, and at this point in time it is, because I get into things. I have opinions and things that are not necessarily anyone else's. I find it more comfortable to over the course of time. And I was in the band, you know, Jim Mankey and I've been playing together for 25 years or something, and so. I did love being in a band, and I love my band. I thought it had one of the greatest bands going on. Mm-hmm. But it became that what I was expressing was not expressing it for them, or vice versa, you know. And we'd have trouble, you know. How do I say this delicately? There, you know, we had problems with one of us being severely on drugs and heroin and everything else, and then I found out, well, everybody thought you were a heroin addict too. I'm like, well, thanks, you know. And so it became, at this point in my life, I really need to establish not for anyone else, but for me. Well, who are you, and what do you think about? And yesterday we were in Annapolis. It was hysterical, and getting ready to leave, and I walked into a deli. And I was going to get a bagel to take on the road, and I noticed they had a sandwich called the George Bush sandwich. And I said, you really have a sandwich called the George Bush sandwich? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, I can't eat here. And I walked out the door. Do you know the guy followed me up the street yelling at me?
Oh, no. Really? Oh, my God.
He did. I turned.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. This guy's coming after me like a goose, you know, like screaming, like the president. It's the president of the United States, or whatever. And I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. It was just too funny. It was like, who needs drugs with stuff like that going on? But that would have been something that the band wouldn't have really liked, you know, mm-hmm. getting them in trouble or whatever. And I'm not deliberately, I don't want to be in trouble. But at the same time you say, you know, I want to say what I want to say, especially now when I think we're all in trouble, you
yeah.
know, so especially now. And I just felt like, well, this is good. And I like the minimalism of traveling by myself without all the entourage and without all the trappings and the hoopla and the crap, and finding out, you know, that, you know, just, you know, we woke up one day in the hotel, and my drummer used to have the whole hotel room parties and things like that, and then we'd wake up, and the whole hotel was tagged with spray paint, Concrete Blonde Rules.
Oh, no.
It's like, thank you for the sentiment, but now I've got to freaking pay for them removing this paint. And I just, you know, I'm not a kid, and believe me, I rocked and rolled and did it harder, better, and faster than anybody. But I'm not a kid anymore. And when you're, you know, when it comes down to, okay, you know, if you keep going like this, you may not be around. And when I lost my little brother, who I took on the Pretty and Twisted tour with me, when he was real young, you know, 14, 15, and I took him to Australia, and we drove and saw the kangaroos, and when he was on tour, I'd take him to every baseball stadium that we stopped at, you know, so he can get his little jerseys and things. And he wasn't even 30, you know, he's in his 20s, and there was nothing anybody could do. He got into things, and there was nothing anybody could do, and it just devastated the hell out of me, because I really was close to the kid, you know. But when you know things like that, I mean, Mark Morland passed away, and I'm still in touch with Mark's mom and Bruce, and it's very strange. I just realized I had dreams about all these people last night. But but it's you know, life is not it's not forever, you know, and you get to a point where you have enough behind you to have a bit of confidence about what you do. And, you know, that's been a tough thing for me to come by. You know, this is the first time in my life that I have been able to go on stage and say, okay, I can do this. This is easy for me. I've been doing this since I was, you know, a kid. That confidence was not always there, and it really is a mess. At the same time, you know, I want to get better and at what I do, and you're at a peak, and I just feel like this is it, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's time to either cook or get out of the kitchen, as it were.
Well, I bet the stage has got to be also pretty a pretty exciting experience for you. I mean, just, you know, kind of coming back to the performing, because it's been a while since you performed live, right? I mean, was the Pretty and Twisted tour?
Yeah, I'll do the odd gig. I was doing the odd gig over the last couple of years, but I just started, like, maybe last year going out, and I did Seattle, I did San Francisco, you know, and I did those a couple of times by myself. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you know, we would always have an acoustic guitar with the band, because if something happened, if the power failed, which it did in Australia once in front of, like, 1,000 people or something, I could always pull out a guitar and until they fix the problem, I could carry it, you know. That's an awkward situation, but it's always been fortunate for me that I could do that, and I'd always be sitting in my room playing guitar. So now it's just a matter of going out and doing what I've done in front of a lot of people, and people that I've known for years. A friend of mine I've known for years says, what do you do live? And I said, well, I play, and it's, you know, my songs. I mean, that's how I wrote a lot of these songs. He says, I got to see you do that. Like, you know, well, Jesus, thanks, dude. This is what I did before I was in a band, so it's natural. It's not a problem for me. Yeah, there's never a day, you know, when I walk out on a stage and sit there and see all these people, you know, what the heck are they all looking at? My God. So then, you know, I will go somewhere else so as not to get too nervous. You know, it's easier for me to pretend that I'm sitting on my porch at home in the desert looking out at absolutely nothing. And then it's easier, you know. So that's why God gave you eyelids and hair. So you can close your eyelids, put your hair over your face, go somewhere else.
And pretend they're not there, right?
Absolutely.
You know, you're talking about the acoustic sound. That actually, you know, gave me the idea. You guys ought to do, or you ought to do, an acoustic album with some of
I've been trying for years. That was my original plan. Yeah, my original plan was to do an acoustic record, and then tour it, you know, because that would give me a reason to go out and be an acoustic person. But for some reason, I haven't been able to do it. I did start one song because I wanted to write it that way, you know. I wanted to write a whole acoustic record, and that probably will be the next thing I do. We shot a DVD in Denver, which was an acoustic solo show, and when I go back to Denver this time, we're going to pick up some stuff and augment it with some interview footage and things like that, and that will probably be out next week. Next year. So, yeah, next week, sure. Deadline.
Technology's fast, but I don't know about
Yes, exactly. So I did do that, but I would like to write, you know, and since I'm out here with an acoustic guitar, I sit here playing it more, you know, know, and so hopefully that will happen. And I would indeed love to do that. I was just talking to Steve Wynn about that the other day, because I had Steve with me on stage in New York where he lives, and we did the Nick Cave song, the ship song,
which
that we had
gorgeous.
Done years ago. Yeah. And you know, it's great. It's so funny because we've done that the last two times we've been in New York. And Steve, I said, Steve, you know, you want to come up and try my new guitar? And he'll come up and just start that song, and we both nailed it. And we haven't played together in years. We haven't even, you know, I haven't even heard the damn song in years. And it just flowed like water.
Come sail your ships around me and burn your bridges down. We make a little history, baby, every time you come around. Come lose your thoughts upon me and let your hair hang down. You are a little mystery, baby, every time you all around. We talk about it all night long, and we define our moral ground. But when I crawl into your arms, everything, it comes tumbling down. Come sail your ships around.
Falling sad now,
know, it was just great. And so we were talking about, you know, it'd be cool to do an acoustic record because it's just the freedom of it. I mean, not just in the day-to-day life factor, the traveling, the minimalism, and the, you know, obviously the expense and everything else, but the fact that whatever happens up there, you can roll with it, you know, and the songs do very much take the shape that they take for the evening, you know. I may play more or less the same set every night because people come, you know, you have to remember that people, you know, this is the only time they've seen you all year or maybe for years, and they have different favorites on different records. I've made a lot of records, so I try to do a well-rounded set that will please everyone. And at the same time, it may not sound like it did last night, whether it's, you know, the mood I'm in or more likely the audience. And that's what live performing is all about. So things will take their own shape or stop and start, or I'll make a mistake and I'll need to drive in another direction to, you know, to fix it or whatever, you know, but that's what live is all about. And that's what makes it fun every night.
That's cool. Kind of going back to your childhood, which I don't want to talk too much about your childhood.
That's all right. Hey, you know what? I get mail. People understand that. They know that. There's a lot of people that say to me, "Wow, I went through that."
And there are a lot of musicians actually who did have that growing up, and it kind of helped spark their creativity. Who were some of your influences back then? Who did you listen to?
When I was a kid, when I was the youngest I can remember, the very first thing musically I remember happening was The Wizard of Oz, the first time it was on TV. And it was so interesting because, remember, it was all black and white and then got into color when the Munchkins came out and everything. somebody owed my dad some money for a job he did, and they didn't have any, so they gave him an upright piano. So I went over to the piano and I picked out Somewhere Over the Rainbow on the piano. And my parents looked at each other. I'll never forget that. They looked at each other like an alien had landed in the living room. And that's when they got me a guitar, and they realized, you know, I really took a liking to the piano. And I think I was I don't even know how old I was, really young. But my mother loved show tunes and country music. And my dad liked, you know, my Italian-American stuff, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin. So I had all those things going on, you know, Gershwin. I just heard some Gershwin on the radio on the classical station the other day, and I just love every note of Rhapsody in Blue. And, you know, I had a lot of that stuff. The Italian-American stuff is very dear to me and reminds me of my dad. And Johnny Cash, God, Johnny Cash, as long as I can hear, you know, Folsom Prison Blues, you know, was playing in the house. And so I have all that from when I was really young, you know. And then when I got into junior high and high school, especially high school, because then you start, you know, having boyfriends and stuff, and they're all into Ozzy.
You start liking
Zeppelin, and what I like to call as a genre, blacklight poster rock. So you have, you know,
totally,
you had Grand Funk, you had, you know, Zeppelin, of course, and Deep Purple, and all that sort of stuff that I was very into because the guys were into it, and I was one of the guys. I always have been all my life, you know. So we'd sit around and smoke our $10 bag of weed and and listen to blacklight poster rock when everybody's moms were working. By this time, everybody's moms are single, you know.
Right.
So this is the 70s. You know, and everybody's moms are single, and so you're home a lot unattended, and you're just, you know, having your friends over and listening to rock and roll and, you know, doing all that stuff. So that was it. And AM radio was huge for me. I really liked, at that time, AM radio was a lot of soul. You had a lot of Motown. You had a lot of Aretha Franklin. You had Gladys Knight and the Pips. You had all that stuff. And to me, still to this day, Mavis Staples, who just came out with a protest song record that I really want to get, her and Aretha Franklin, I mean, to me, that's like the state of the art as far as singing goes. So I was really into soul singing. I got really into the prog stuff in high school, you know, Yes and Supertramp and all that sort of stuff, Steely Dan, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, whatever. I was just a sponge for everything that was going on. I liked just about everything. You know,
that's,
I liked
cool
pop music, you know, and AM radio was really where it's at when I was in the kitchen washing dishes and everything. You know, AM radio is what was happening for me.
And it's certainly changed these days. I mean, I imagine radio Isn't that something you listen to a lot of these days?
I don't have a television. Radio is all I listen to.
Oh, radio is all you listen to. Okay.
All I listen to, yeah. I don't have a TV, and I deliberately don't have a TV, which is my problem. I look like hell this morning because when I get into a hotel, it's like a TV to me. It's like, you know, Law and Order is my downfall. And I finally, at 1 o'clock in the morning, I go, oh, God, there's another episode. I can't do this anymore. But that's all I listen to is radio. Talk radio. I stream old radio theater, you know, like Green Hornet and all that old stuff. NPR, BBC, and the local station out in Joshua Tree. I hate to say it because I can't stand the guy that runs it, but he's really he's really very pro development, and he's a real schmuck. I can't stand him, but they play a lot of the top, you know, what's top 10 today on pop radio. And then I listen to, you know, I have people that are friends of mine that are very in touch with, you know, what's going on now in, I don't know the formats, but what bands are out now, what's going on now. And I do pay a little attention to that because I do hear it, you know, out there. And, but they never back announce anything, so I don't know what's going on. I don't know who's who.
Right.
They never back announce that stuff.
What you just listened to, yeah.
Yeah, I just what I hear, and I go, oh, that's really good. Gnarls Barkley's amazing, and you know, there's some stuff that's really great. Nelly Furtado's single's amazing, and so you know, there's stuff that I do recognize that I think is really great. I'm a dancer, also. You know, I've been studying flamenco for 20 years, and I studied in Spain. And
oh wow.
So I've got a show coming up in August that I'm doing with my teacher that I'm really nervous about, and there's been no floors. Everything's been carpeted. I brought my shoes to practice, and I just can't. Either that or I'm on the third floor, and I'll get in trouble with who's
there
under me.
With the people on the second floor, right?
Yeah. So, you know.
Wow. Well, we talked a little bit about the ship song earlier. What have been you've done quite a few covers as part of Concrete Blonde, and then you've got a couple on the solo album here. Which were some of your favorites to record cover-wise?
Cover-wise, the Leonard Cohen song was a big one for us, and that was nowhere near our idea. There was a movie called Pump Up the Volume back in the day with
Christian Slater.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. And we were asked to do that for part of the soundtrack, and so we did it. I learned it, and we did it. And Miles Copeland, who'd run IRS Records, we had finished Bloodletting too at the same time, and he wanted to put it on Bloodletting because he didn't hear a single on Bloodletting, and I fought tooth and nail. I used to fight really hard, you know, and it seems like it's, you know, and if I hadn't, I wouldn't be here today. If I hadn't fought, I would have been lame. I kicked Milli Vanilli's stylist off a video set once. I mean, you know, I got the reputation of being really difficult, and I think I still do. I think as of this week, I am still considered that. But you know what? If I hadn't done it, I don't fight about the things that are important, that I don't feel are important. It's
sure.
Like, you don't like this photo, fine. You don't like this, fine. Whatever. But when it comes to the music I'm doing, I really, you know, and unless I do, it doesn't seem to go right. So for whatever reason, I don't like to fight, but I fought then because I really believed in Bloodletting, and Miles didn't think he heard a single on it.
Mm. Yeah, there were so many.
Yeah, I know. When I turned it in, I just said, you know something, I'm leaving the country, and this is the record you have to put out. And if you don't like it, too bad. I have no clue about why that would happen. But so Everybody Knows turned out to be a real big song on the soundtrack.
And a long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
One thing I do appreciate are good lyrics, and I had a friend of mine who's passed away too, Rick L. Rick, who is a legendary punk guy back in L.A. and from San Francisco, and he turned me on to Leonard Cohen. And I really, you know, Leonard is obviously just one of the greatest...
Master poets.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, and even his book, he had a book that I can't remember the title of now, but it's really, really great. But he sent me roses in Europe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he sent me roses, and he wanted to know what my favorite flower was, and at the time it was yellow roses, because that was my mom's favorite flower, and he sent it, and he sent a note that said, "Thank you for covering the best." How's that for a mixed message?
Wow.
And I actually gave that note to Rick, who's passed away now, but I gave that to Rick because I know it meant the world to him.
Oh, you
know?
Yeah.
It was very cool.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, there's still people that that talk to me because through Coverville who don't realize that Everybody Knows is the cover and that Leonard Cohen's version is the original. I've gotten emails
That's
requesting
funny
to hear.
Too, because somebody just went to. I just got an email from somebody who went to see Wicker Park.
Mm-hmm.
And or yeah, saw Wicker Park, and they says, you know, why is Coldplay doing your song? I'm like, what the hell?
Wow!
So I'm like, that's not my song.
Well, see, that's got to be hugely flattering.
It is. Well, it is because if you make something your own and people believe it, then that's really good. And it's difficult to do. You know, it's not difficult to do for me. As a matter of fact, when we covered that, I'm a bit of a method actor when it comes to delivering a vocal. I really have to be in it. And so I drove around with the song in my truck for 2 days and And when I went to do the vocal, and I was depressed for 2 days. And when I went I went around to Danny to do the vocal, and I'm like, this is depressing. I'm going to commit suicide. I hope we're getting paid for doing this. It was very funny. It was really funny. But still, but that was the whole thing, is like, I've got to believe it when I'm singing it. I have extreme difficulty singing something I don't believe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty common, actually, with other artists I've talked to about doing covers. I mean, if they don't feel the lyrics, then the cover,
then you can't do them.
Exactly.
And I can really tell when somebody's clocking it in, you know. And there's a very famous line that Steve Wynn used to tell me. Marathon Man, I think, was the movie with Sir Laurence Olivier
Dustin
Al Pacino.
Dustin Hoffman. Yeah.
And I think Dustin Hoffman was a method actor, and would come in all scraggly and bummed out every day, and just having stayed up all night and just crazy and nuts and everything. And Sir Laurence Olivier said, "My dear, why don't you try acting?"
Wow.
I thought that was such a good line. But and I am actually, the interesting thing about this time is that I can enjoy the songs for their own sake. It's not like the old days where I really was a mess and I would come off every day. And like, meeting people after the show was impossible because I'd be collapsed in a room in the corner in the dressing room, you know, because I just put myself through so much crap. Mm-hmm. These days I am able to have a degree of stepping back and appreciating the songs for just being good songs. Like it's kind of like the reverse, pretending my own songs are not my songs.
Mm.
And stepping back and saying, this is a really good song. I hadn't realized it at the time, because every time I sing it, I go back to the place when I wrote it. And that's not a place I want to be now all the time, because it'll make me impossible to live my life. Mm-hmm. You know, some of these things were just so torturous to exorcise. But when I hear some of them now, and I don't even remember writing them, you know, it's just such an out-of-body experience for me that I'll sit back and go, well, this is a good song on its own merit, and I'll enjoy it that way. I don't have to go back all the way back into, you know, I mean, it's just time is like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like you're reinventing your own music, which
exactly.
I think is really
exactly.
cool. Yeah,
exactly.
Excellent. Well, are there any songs that you've wanted to cover, but that you haven't
millions
done?
Of them. Millions and millions and millions of them. I am constantly, there's so many of them. And I'm always messing around with songs. There's really an old one. I think it's by ELP, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's called "It's All Here." You were meant to be here from the beginning.
Oh yeah,
such
yeah.
a beautiful song, and it's cool because it's an acoustic song, and the guitar part is so cool that I find myself, well, with an acoustic guitar, what's a cool acoustic song? So I'll, you know, and I know all these songs from when I was a kid, you know, and things that you don't think will be good covers but are really good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of things. There's some songs that my friends have that I really like. There's one song by a band called Gleaming Spires, who were part of Sparks a long
right,
time ago.
Right.
Yeah, you know Gleaming Spires?
I know Gleaming Spires.
Oh my God, how good is that record? Posh Boy. I knew Posh Boy who put that record out, and
oh,
there's
wow.
some songs on that record. Bloodbeat is just such a beautiful song, and I've wanted to do that for 20 years or something. And so there's quite a few. Yeah,
yeah,
there's
for the
quite
longest
a few
time.
That are great. I want to do a cover of The Highwaymen by, you know, Willie and Waylon and Chris and Johnny. I've wanted to do that because it's all about reincarnation, and I just think, and all four of them sing, and I wanted to get four women together to do all those verses because it's about reincarnation, and who says you're coming back as a man or woman or anything else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the lyrics. Just every time I hear that, I'm a big Art Bell fan, and I listen to Art Bell every night. He's on from 10 to like 5 in the morning in California, and I'll have that on all night long and just kind of get up and down all night and just listen to whatever's going on. And he plays that a lot, and every time I hear it, it just gets me in a gut. It's just so beautiful.
Wow.
And I'd love to cover that with three women who I have ideas about doing it with, but I think it'd be just a brilliant song to do
oh, wow.
with four women. You know?
That would be amazing, yeah.
Wouldn't it?
Great. Well, Jeanette, I want to thank you very much. This has been a great interview,
you.
And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me this morning.
Oh, I appreciate you even asking. That's great. Who knew? You know, if you would have asked me, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, if I would be doing this now at this point in time, I would have said, no, I expect it to be all over by then. So it's just a minor miracle to me that people still even know who I am.
Oh, absolutely. And I know that we're always looking forward to the next thing, too. You know, what is next for you after the tour and...
Let's see. Well, more touring, you know, except these days I do it differently than I did in the old days. It's like 3 weeks on, a couple weeks off, 3 weeks on, a couple weeks off, because I need my home and my dogs and my life to be grounded. I need to use my hands. I need to make my art. I need to, I'll be hitting Burning Man in September, which I did last year for the first time, and bought a little trailer and hit it, and I'll never miss it again. It was the most life-affirming experience. I swear to God, I was just in tears just saying, oh, my God, this is great. The world should be like this. This is wonderful. And it was just amazing, and I think that's helped me a lot more than anything, is to realize the potential of who we are and what we can do and how creative we are. Mm-hmm. And you don't really see that much on TV or in the day-to-day world or whatever, you know, but it's definitely there. So it was a very life-affirming thing for me. So I get to have other experiences. You can't put out and put out and put out all the time without taking things in. Mm-hmm. So to have the time off physically, emotionally, mentally, to recenter myself, to be home, which is very important. Home is very important to me because we were evicted, like, I don't know how many times when I was a kid, and moved around a lot. So home is very important to me, to be there. And my people in Joshua Tree are my family, and I'm really, really happy, you know, to have the balance. It's all about balance.
Yeah.
So as long as I keep that, and you can only plan so much before something will come along and surprise you and say, well, you get the chance to do this now. Like, oh, okay, that's exciting. Okay. You know, that's what life is too. You got to let life unfold the way it's going to unfold, you know? So it's, you know, you got to kind of have a combination of both. You know, I want sure. There are goals I want to reach. And then again, when something comes along, I'm open, you know?
Cool. Well, all right. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you,
for your
sweetheart.
Time.
Thank you very, very much.
I really appreciate it.
That is our show for today. Remember, if you want to get in touch with me here at Coverville, you can do it by emailing me at coverville@gmail.com. You can call the request line 206-222-COVER or post a message on the weblog at www.coverville.com. Big thanks to cashfly.com for hosting, for the bandwidth for Coverville. And thanks also to Backbeat Media. Coverville is part of the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.